now broadcasting the Webcomic Beacon.
Hello and welcome to episode 201 of the Webcomic Beacon here at webcomicbeacon.com, and we of course are a part of the Webcast Beacon Network at webcastbeacon.com, where you can find other amazing podcast programming such as the Webcomic Beacon Newscast, the Tropecast, and Web Fiction World. And starting next month, a brand new program is going to be coming out in because of the DC 52 comic reboot. It's going to be called First Issue, and we're looking to have myself, Melissa Kircher, and today's guest, Marcus Almond, on that particular new program as we review the first issues of the DC comic reboots, and if it works, quite possibly more other number one issues or first issues of storylines in comics. It's going to be called Webcomic Beacon, First Issue. It's going to be under the Webcomic Beacon flag. Yes. Aside from that, we do have myself. I'm Fess of PSIWebcomic.com. We also have Mark Savory of AutumnLake.com.
Well, hello there.
And Giggly Tanya Higgins of DaisiesAndShitProductions.com.
Hello, hello.
Is it production or productions?
Productions. There is more than one.
All right, cool. And as I stated earlier, we do have a guest on the show, Marcus Almond of therazorkid.deviantart.com presently.
Yep, and there's also razorkid.com, which is where you can find the information and actually the first two issues of my comic that later became a webcomic, Razor Kid.
Awesome. Now, before we get into the topic of this show, why don't you tell us a bit about Razor Kid, since it's available online now.
Okay, well, Razor Kid is basically the story of a teenager who is a genius at engineering and mechanics, who ends up stumbling upon a conspiracy that was put together by the government, kind of to keep him quiet slash intimidate him into silence. They rip off both of his arms. And a couple years down the line, he ends up creating a pair of robotic arms in order to investigate it.
Nice.
Sorry, I got distracted there.
It's brilliant artwork, by the way.
Thank you.
It's professional stuff that you've put together here.
Oh, I'm the writer. I have three writers.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So, but as the writer, are you also the coordinator? Did you find like the artist and everything? Well, there you go. It's professional stuff you put together here.
Oh, thank you.
All right. The topic of the show is I'm calling it PC versus diversity, but we might come up with a different title by the end of the show. The idea was to take a look at things that people aren't really talking about as much, as well as talking about, as a few weeks ago, the primer was when I found Marcus on Twitter tweeting about the we lost. Who did we lose? We lost Marcus. There's Marcus, I think. Marcus? All right, let me make a note so I can fix this in post. 350. Hello?
Down.
Oh, son of a bitch.
He just lost our guest.
You back?
Yeah.
All right. So, it started a few weeks ago when I found Marcus on Twitter talking about the new Ultimate Spider-Man, of how he's not white, basically. And people bitching about this and that and things like that. And that was the primer for this episode. And I will mention that a couple of days ago on Google Plus, Spike of Templar, Arizona had posted. Let me see if I can find it. Yes, she posted the. Quote, Refusing to include cultures, ethnicities, and lifestyles you don't have any personal experience with in your fiction out of fear that you might offend someone or get it wrong is a coward-ass move. And I'll provide the link to that, and you can see the sort of discussion that went on. Obviously, there is some tension going on with including people of differentness in things that you write. But we'll start off with Ultimate Spider-Man. Marcus, can you set this up for us?
All right. Well, basically, I think it was a couple months ago, in Ultimate Spider-Man, which is a offshoot kind of alternate universe of the normal Marvel universe, the Peter Parker of that world ended up dying. And the reveal is that the person who's kind of taking over his role as the second Spider-Man of that universe is a character named Miles Morales, who's half Latino and half black. One important thing to keep in mind is that the Ultimate Universe is not the mainstream Marvel Universe, like the one that has existed since the 60s. That one, it's still Peter Parker. And he's like 40-something, or I don't know. I haven't kept track of that one very well, and they kind of move around, whatever.
Yeah, and Auntie is 120.
Yeah, and still alive for some reason. I mean, she's still alive in the Ultimate World, too, but like, to give you a little bit of perspective, the Ultimate Universe started in the year 2000, and with the assumption that the Marvel Universe itself began that year, so that version of Aunt May is like an ex-hippie, as compared to the Aunt May from the original 616 Marvel Universe, where she was old enough to disapprove of hippies.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's a very different sort of world. In fact, in that world, like, most of the original characters are dead after a huge line-wide crossover in 2008, where they, yeah.
Kind Ultimatum?
Of, oh, God, don't. I was hoping not to advertise.
Don't say the name.
Oh, dear. Yeah, it's not a very good.
Have you ever been part of a market survey? You know, maybe you're at the mall and they pull you into one of those little rooms, make you eat a candy bar, and then you have to talk about how you feel about it. And then from that, they decide whether or not they're going to make the candy bar. That's what Marvel's alternate universe feels like to me. It's like, what can we do that readers will swallow?
Well, I would like to have a candy bar.
The way it basically started out was, how can we, the way I always saw it is sort of, how can we capitalize on the movies? Because at least starting out, the Ultimate Universe was far more related, at least visually, to the Marvel movies of the age than anything else. Like the X-Men, for example, all wore black leather.
Right.
So, like, if you came back from watching a film and then got into the comic book shop and, you know, took a look, you might see, okay, here's the X-Men where they're all wearing these odd different colors, or here movie I just saw. So that was sort of like their idea. And from what I recall, their original like game plan was to kind of use that as a springboard to retell the classic stories in a more modern setting, so you didn't have to go back 40 years to read like these legendary stories. But eventually it kind of got away from that idea and kind of became its own thing.
Yeah.
This is where the Samuel L. Jackson version of Nick Fury comes from, that you see in the movies, for example.
Nick Fury was always Samuel L. Jackson.
Okay, maybe in your head.
No, if you look at the fucking artwork, and you look at the character, he's fucking Samuel Jackson.
The Ultimate Universe version. Prior to that, they have at some point used David Hasselhoff. Which got really confusing with the video games because they couldn't figure out which version they wanted to go with. So in X-Men Legends 2, it's Samuel L. Jackson. And then in Ultimate Alliance 1 and 2, it's the like Caucasian version.
Yeah.
So it's a little... if you take those as separate games completely with different worlds, then it doesn't really matter.
He's got the reverse Michael Jackson disease, I suppose.
I think it is just a Michael Jackson disease in the video games. But
yeah, because he did bleach... there. I think maybe it's that transitory nature of it all. It feels like they're testing things out. And, you know, going back to the Spider-Man thing, it's like, huh, I wonder what happens if we put a brown person in. You know, it seems experimental without cause, you know, to me. And while
that's called marketing, dear.
Well, yes, I know, but it's so transparent. I like my marketing subtle.
It's like Superman, like the different costumes of Superman back when they killed Superman. Yeah. And who was the real Superman? And they had all the different costumes, and then he turned blue.
Yeah, it's kind of like when they put out a bunch of different things and, you know, everybody on the internet votes by clicking on a link. They're doing that, except they're just, you know, looking for public opinion and who buys the comic, you know, and if you reach a certain threshold, you win and you go with that concept. I don't know. It just seems.
But you also said that this is not, Peter Parker is dead, so it's not even like the real Spider-Man. So I don't see why some people have their panties in a twist about this.
Which is always annoying to me. And the weird thing is Marvel's generally a lot better at it than this when it comes to including, you know, diverse characters.
Right.
Because the problem that I have when they do this whole legacy thing is that, it first of all, they tend to be really controversial no matter what you do, whether even if the like new one is Caucasian as well. They're kind of there. I understand what they want to do. They want to piggyback off of an established property name so that this character doesn't just get canceled and forgotten. The problem is that that approach kind of represents, again, kind of makes representation look like a zero-sum game.
Yeah.
You can't have a Caucasian and a non-Caucasian character in the same area. And the reason why I say Marvel generally does this right is you can go back to the 70s with the giant size X-Men number one, when they introduced a lot of the X-Men we're familiar with, like Storm and Wolverine and whoever. Right. The thing is, Storm was not Marvel Girl 2. Wolverine was not Beast 2. Thunderbird wasn't, like, I don't know, Archangel 2. Granted, Thunderbird didn't last too long, but you know what I mean? Like they didn't take these characters and just put them into the roles of the old ones, and they actually brought the old ones back, obviously, because we know, you know, that Jean Grey and Iceman and Beast and all those people stuck around and are still around in most cases.
Yeah, most cases.
But in most, I mean, the thing is, it's comics, so no one really stays dead, generally, unless they're, like, tertiary characters that no one cares about or what have you. But like, I can just go down a list here of characters who were done right because of identities, and it tends to work best when the new characters have their own identities.
Yeah.
You have people like Power Man / Luke Cage, Storm, Black Panther, North Star, who's gay, Hulkling, and Wiccan, both are also gay, Bishop, Danny Moonstar, Steel, Static, Spawn even, Icon, GW Bridge, Warpath, Thunderbird, the Falcon, eventually James Rhodes.
I don't know who War Machine. These people are.
And there's like Jubilee, Dust, and Armor, you know.
Well, yeah.
All these characters tended to work out.
Well, you know, and that to me is good writing, though. That didn't seem like this experimental slapshod kind of thing. You know, they were introducing new characters rather than, like you said, you know, tattooing a new character onto an old identity.
I call that palette swapping.
Palette swapping. Yeah.
And from what I understand, that's something that, like, at least from the interviews that I've read with Brian Michael Bendis, who's the writer for Ultimate Spider-Man and has been since it started in 2000, like, he's been like the sole person writing that series. Like, maybe there might have been a fill-in. Correct me if I'm wrong. I'm pretty sure there wasn't. But just to kind of cover my ass, I'll say that maybe one or two issues here or there he didn't. But I'm 99% sure he wrote every single issue of this series. And from what I understand, and assuming that this is accurate information, he kind of he'd been wanting to do this for a while because both of his children are adopted and they're African-American. And so he kind of was like, you know, I kind of have this comic here that's, you know, mega popular, but I don't have any characters who really look like my daughters. And it'd be nice to have characters that they can identify with visually.
Right.
And
Lily White.
Yeah. I mean, the thing is, with a lot of those older comic properties, they were created before the Civil Rights Movement.
Right.
Most you'd ever see even representative of non-white characters, and if you ever saw non-straight characters, they're always terrible stereotypes.
Well, with the non-straight characters, though, that was actually against the comic code for a long time. You couldn't have
them. Oh, God, yeah. You couldn't have them You couldn't have them at all.
Really?
And if you did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, the comic book was ridiculous.
You'd occasionally see a Native American.
Occasionally.
I think like Tomahawk was one. Or, I mean, there were always Apache ridiculous Chief. Stereotypes. Yeah. Like Black Lightning was another.
Racial diversity wasn't against the comic code. Sexual orientation diversity absolutely was. You could not. It just was like, you know, against comics. You couldn't do it in any of the DC or Marvel comics. You couldn't have a homosexual character or bisexual character. You couldn't have an ambiguous character as a hero.
Not a hero. I mean, you could have villains or just background people, but yeah.
Yep.
They were really screwy. But
this sort of explosion of fabulousness when they finally got rid of the comic code, where they thought, oh, we can have gay people. And so you saw these little... I was sitting with a bunch of friends, we related it to popcorn, where, you know, you hear the first pop, and then another one, and then there's this little burst. It was kind of like that with the gay characters in the comics for me.
Yeah, they kind of popped around.
Yeah.
And, like, I mean, they had a couple, like, before that. Like, North Star is a, you know, really major. For a long time, he was, like, the only one. But, yeah, like, you can actually get away with it now. But it works a lot better when they have their own identities.
Yes.
As opposed to, like, you know, weird replacement characters, which in some cases messed around and worked. Like, for example, the new Blue Beetle, Jaime Reyes. Is way more popular than the previous one, Ted Kord, but...
Well, okay, but how good was that character?
Pretty good.
Really?
Which one? You mean Jaime or Ted?
No, the Ted Kord.
Oh, Ted Kord had a very, like, dedicated but small fan base, but he was, not that great on his own. I mean, that's usually why they replace characters, is when they start to kind of wane. But like even one that's not necessarily racially based, but you have Wally West replacing Barry Allen as a Flash.
Right.
He did that because Barry Allen wasn't selling because he's a boring stick in the mud.
Because he's oatmeal.
Yeah. Like him and Hal Jordan like were utterly uninteresting.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I wanted to touch on the DC side of things. One thing I remember, don't groan before I say anything. No, one thing I remember, because I don't read comic books. I have read 2 issues, period.
Ever?
He brags about this every third episode I listen to you guys. I know.
I bring up a lot of things every third episode. But
I didn't know it was 2. I mean, I knew you didn't read comic books, but 2? You've read 2 comic books?
One was a Dinobots comic, and the other was one of the Supergirl number 1 comics.
No wonder you didn't read anymore. Why would you start at the bottom of the barrel?
My dad got me the first one once who hated movies, and I couldn't wrap my brain around that concept. He thought movies were all bad, stupid waste of time. And I said, well, what have you seen? Oh, Volcano, You've Got Mail, stuff like that. The only time he'd see a movie is when he took a chick to a date because he didn't know what else to do.
Oh, God.
And the only movies he ever saw were like these crap movies.
Chick flicks.
And that's you with comic books, man. I'm just saying.
Well, I read newspaper comics, and I read a ton of web comics. So I read comics, just not the print comic books. Yeah. But going off from that, the only place that I really get all my information about like Marvel and DC are, the DC animations, mostly from like the 90s, and then of course a lot of the movies. So that's where I get my thing. You know, one of the things I was trying to go back to is that I remember when. It's like after Batman the Animated Series, they had like the new Justice League, whatever, and Green Lantern wasn't Hal Jordan. It was some black guy. And it's like, wait a minute. It's
John Stewart.
That's not. Yeah, Stewart. That's not. Who's this? You know, I was confused. I had no idea what was going on.
He'd been around for years and was around for years before he even became another Green Lantern. The nice thing about the Green Lantern Corps is that there can be very many more than one.
Yeah.
So it kind of worked out on its own. But yeah, he's one of the people that I kind of put on my list of kind of high profile replacement characters that then, I mean, like I said, like because of the nature of the Green Lantern setting, he ended up kind of working out.
Mm-hmm.
And from what I understand, kind of one of the reasons why they wanted to go with Green, the Green Lantern in the cartoon was because there would literally be no one who wasn't white or green on that team.
Yeah,
if they didn't have him,
segments of the entire cartoon. He was the only minority designation other than women.
Which is actually another one because they had Hawkgirl instead of Hawkman.
Yeah, I was confused. See, I was confused from that. I thought they like palette swapped the Green Lantern, and it was like they gender switched the Hawkman. It's like, what is going on?
No, they were husband and wife.
Yeah, they've long been two of them.
See, before that, my only experience with the Justice League was Super Friends.
Oh Christ!
Oh good God!
Well, the funny thing about Super Friends and that whole era is that's kind of why people were getting pissed off with DC Comics more recently. Particularly because they were killing off a lot of legacy characters and bringing back the from the Super Friends.
Well, I really hated the two kids with the dog. That was stupid.
All of it was stupid.
You know, that was a monkey. It was Gleep. Gleep the monkey.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't a dog.
It was the Wonder Twins.
Yeah, no, that was with the Wonder Twins. No, I'm talking about the other ones, the ones that was done in the 70s.
Super Friends in the 70s.
Yeah, like two fuck off kids and their dog or some shit. It's like, why are these kids here? They don't have any powers that I remember.
Something useless. Of course.
I like the Wonder Twins, though.
No. She's talking about the two. Like, there's a boy and a girl who were kind of like.
They were like the fans who hung out.
It was like Shaggy and Daphne.
Yeah.
They're the Muggle really contingent weird. In any Harry Potter like fanzine. You always have the two Muggles that hang around. It's kind of like that. They were the two normals.
Yeah.
Yeah. They represented us.
Oh, so that's right.
That's true.
So that we could be there with these super people.
How annoying.
As opposed to just, you know, themselves as one of them, but
I think they missed it. Like, the whole point of watching the whole superhero thing is so that you can imagine yourself as being more than you. This is for people with no aspirations. This is for kids who don't want to be more than they can be. They just want to hang around with people who are cool.
No, they want to get captured and rescued. That's what they want to do, apparently.
It's the same thing in sci-fi when they have kids. When they put kids in a sci-fi show, like Boxy, man, I was so rooting for Cylons the more I saw of him. I was hoping they would reprogram his stupid Daggett so it would attack him.
So here's an interesting question. Do you think it's because it's no longer PC to have the, you know, the damsel in distress? You need the Daphne character to always get captured in order to make an element of danger. They can't do that anymore. So now you have to have a non-superhero character to get captured, or a kid, or some other emotional drop.
Oh, but they've already done that. They've always done that.
Or little human women.
They've always had those. Lois Lane. Sometimes it would be an adult, sometimes it would be a woman, sometimes it would be a kid. Because some, you know, there'd be like the kind of, granted, he just never happened to this character, but like the Polly from Rocky, you know, like some doof who just kind of hangs around and would get in trouble. I mean, Polly never really got in that much trouble, but I always felt like if they made a Rocky animated series, that's what Polly would do. He'd get into some kind of gambling debt, and then Rocky would have to come and punch someone out. That's why I figured whatever would happen if they ever did that. He was just sort of the type.
Yeah, the redhead cameraman from the Daily Planet. What was his name?
Jimmy Olsen.
Jimmy Olsen.
Yeah, it was Jimmy's job to do stupid shit and get buried under rubble. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like it'd either be Jimmy Olsen or Lois Lane, depending on the episode. At least they had some variants, I guess. But they tend to have those, the little Muggle person, but that's kind of what we were talking about for the Super Friends. And the sad thing is those characters did eventually become part of the DC mix. I think they're both dead now.
Yay.
I haven't paid attention. That was part of that era where I just didn't bother.
And on that note, we're going to take our first break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back.
This program is a part of the Webcast Beacon Network and is hosted on the Rampage Network. Follow us on Twitter at Webcomic Beacon. Email us at webcomicbeacon@gmail.com or leave us a voicemail by calling 1-320-310-0922. The Webcast Beacon Network, covering and promoting creativity and the creative process since 2007. webcomics, comic news, tropes, and web fiction at webcastbeacon.com. Now, back to our show.
Okay, we do have a few milestones, and one milestone from March, which I don't think I got, and I apologize if I did not. If I did, then it's going to get repeated, so I'm doing this just in case. True Life Adventures hits the 10-year anniversary. Again, I apologize if I didn't mention that in March when I received this. That's True, TRU-LifeAdventures.com. Also, we have, let's see here, TWXXD.com has hit their first 100. So congratulations on that. So if your comic is going to hit its first year or its first 100 pages or strips, we want to hear about it so we can mention it on the show. Send your milestones to webcomicbeacon@gmail.com. And we're back.
Yay, that was fast.
Yay. I think I'm the first guest not to be surprised by this.
We'll be right back.
Well, and then Mark and Tanya will never let it up.
What one I ever let up? What?
The whole break thing.
Well, what? It's ridiculous that you fake want to break.
You fake break.
It's not ridiculous that you fake it. It's that when you don't warn guests, hey, by the way.
Right,
the
okay.
Are yeah. pointless. Yeah. Like if you would just tell them at the beginning of the show, we need a little like break people in, like, hey, we don't really give you any, you know, major
breakdown
of what the episode's gonna be like. We just launch into it and our breaks are sort of fake and then fake say, break. Okay, well, here we're gonna start.
They're real for the MP3.
Well, yeah, and the way I would put it is just make sure your guests have listened to at least one episode.
No. I don't want them to do that because then they might not want to come on.
I don't think that's a good policy.
It is, though, a decent point.
Okay, so. I had a point, I think. But I don't remember it anymore. Let's see here. We have. So the whole idea about this show is to bring up this whole sort of issue is you know, obviously we're talking about a lot of print comics here, but that you know just because it's print comics doesn't
mean
it's
not.
He
disappeared. And then
you know, getting kicked off Skype is a lot like passing out. You know, first your hearing goes, you can't hear anymore, and then things get dark. And then, poof, you're gone.
Hello? Are you on wireless?
Yes.
Ah, there we go.
Can you not be? Is that a possibility?
Not right now. No.
I'm just keeping notes so I can cut it out.
That's all good.
All right. I was on a roll, I think.
No, you weren't. You hadn't started yet. You said you thought you had a point.
No, then I was starting to go into it.
Oh, yeah, you were getting off the print comics and on to the stuff that we're supposed to be talking about.
Well, no, see, just because it's print comics doesn't mean that's not relative to a web cartoonist. It's all comic creation. Obviously, the difference between print and web comics is the medium and the presentation. The content is still easily crossoverable, especially when you're talking about, as I said earlier, when Spike was saying, if you like, you're adamantly refusing to basically step outside your comfort zone because out of fear that you're going to offend somebody, you know, and then I think that's something to bring up. Cause I can talk about, you know, I worked with Ardra, and Ardra doesn't really have any diversity in it aside from when I decide, you know what, I think, John doesn't tell me about like, he had we have like characters that are just kind of, there's a character there. We don't specify who's who or whatever. And so I was like, I can color her, something and go with that. I don't know if that's bad, to include characters of color that you don't, that aren't really included just for the fact to include them. I feel that's a little PC versus actually trying to be diverse. Cause we are not planning these characters to be anything really.
They're adding minorities. You're such a jerk, dude.
All right, here's my, and this is exactly what I was afraid of.
No.
When I saw the title, title of the show, I thought he's going to try and draw a line between people who think, yeah, this character could be brown or a woman or whatever, and do that so that they can, you know, I don't know, at least have some difference there.
My point
and
of this
then
show is
people
to,
who
or
are
just some semblance of the real world.
Right. Or right. People who are trying. How are you making this line between people who are just being BC and people who are being diverse?
Do you have a formula?
Yes.
Do you have a formula, Fest?
Oh,
yes,
he does.
I do.
A formula.
The formula
You've
for,
got to have a
the
formula.
Formula for this show is the point of bringing it up for discussion. I wasn't drawing a line.
Oh, okay.
I was saying. I mean, obviously, my thoughts for like being PC is to my thoughts for PC are for the people that are trying to get the numbers right. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, we have to have so many of this. Oh, we have three girl characters. One of them's got to be white. One of them's got to be black. One of them's got to be Asian. That particular trope really annoys the hell out of me. Because it's out of obligation versus real intent.
But here's what I have to say. At least it's being done. It's better than people who decide, I don't want to be, I don't want to force the issue. I don't want to do it just because I feel like I have to. So everybody's going to be just like me. I would rather see forced color or, you know, forced diversity. That's at least making an effort. I don't give a fuck why you're making an effort. At least you're making an effort.
Well, as long as they're not outright stereotypes.
Well, there's, yeah. I mean, like, as long as you're not doing, yeah, horrendous stereotypes like like in the 40s. But yeah, it's one of those things where the line is not there, really. I mean, like, one of the ones that I kind of bring up, everything else about it is ridiculously, like, the opposite of subtle, right? Captain Planet. But the funny thing is the racial diversity makes perfect sense because it's a world spanning setting. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And the idea is that the goddess of the earth has brought five kids from five corners of the globe together. If all of them were white, this would be weird.
Right.
It would be. And I just realized my comic is kind of the anti-Captain Planet. I was telling Marcus.
Are you just noticing that?
I was telling
We've
Marcus
got furries.
About it. No, I was telling Marcus about it. Is like the backstory is that the goddess of the planet got pissed off at the people of the world and tried to obliterate most of them.
Yeah.
Oh wow. She only enlisted three people of the earth to do the smiting. It's terrible. Nice. I'm not gonna go into it. But I was
it's
telling.
It's because you're misogynistic. Yeah. You're misandrist. Is what it is.
Yeah. Well, it was. Sweet anyway, people. Not going into that. But I was telling Marcus that my comic.
Yeah,
My diversity, and I'm doing the finger quotes, was having the human and furry world, and then I'd have my select humans, and then I basically all the other characters are like different animals, and I don't think I've done more than one of the same type of species yet, aside from humans. And I'm trying to think of like within that there was a female canine character that I did make with the intention of making her Indian.
How do you make an Indian dog?
She's a brown dog. Well, she has brownish.
So, okay, but so is like the Australian.
Do you mean like an Indian or like Native American?
India. Like from India. Like I had the intent that I'm going to try to make a slightly reddish brown dog. Well, my idea was I was trying to make a new character that wasn't
an
like
an Irish setter who likes curry.
No, that wasn't like the typical character I've already basically been making, which are all kind of the same. So I was trying to do a different character.
I think the point is attempting to integrate racial diversity with animals probably not going to come through.
No, and it didn't really because I didn't have a chance to explore the character very much. But, you know, that's...
I don't think it matters how much you explore the character. It's a dog.
Yeah. Just because. Are you being specious?
Really stand in for a person.
Am I specious really
given an accent like a Scotty dog. Like a Scotty has a Scottish accent, like in
holy
you know, but like I think movies. The thing that you explained to me about the character is something that you didn't mention here. That you probably should. It doesn't really make it a hell of a lot better, but at least I know why you chose a dog. Is where you just kind of, well, that people who are, you know, because dogs aren't really well, highly thought of
right.
in India, for example. So, like, I thought, like, okay, maybe you can use that as, like, a way to kind of deal with prejudice as right. a concept, but that's not really the same thing as,
human
racial diversity.
I think if you're going to introduce diversity via furries, you would be talking about cultural diversity more than you would racial diversity.
Yeah, I can say that. Yeah.
All I said is that all I was planning is that this character would be from India.
Yes.
I didn't really go, I didn't figure
well,
out.
Well, I know, but then you said it was going to be a brown dog, and that just sounded silly.
Well, yeah, that just sounded awful. don't say it that way.
Well, she has a mix of brown fur coats on her. It's not just plain brown.
Either way, the color of an animal's fur is not going to introduce racial diversity. I can see the concept of cultural.
I was trying to explain what my thought process was. I wasn't saying it was like a great idea. I'm not saying that it worked. Yeah, the other idea for making it be a dog is that just because something like this doesn't mean that there can't be a dog character, etc. One of the things, if we can kind of talk about furry just a little bit more, is like one of the things I really hate in furrydom when you're having like comics is when you make like the stereotypical sort of like insinuation, you make the fox like a sly and cunning. It's like that pisses me off. You make the dog the detective. That's stupid.
That's so Disney.
Yeah, all like these sort of like.
So you're talking about animal stereotypes now?
Well, no, it's like looking at you know basically pigeonholing a type of species to be of a particular brand or a culture or whatever. And then I'm going to go back. It's like when you look at, like say, people of different colors, you can't just say, oh, they're like that, so they must be of that culture or that ethnicity or whatever. You know, just because they're white or black or whatever you have doesn't dictate what their ethnicity is or their culture or their nationality at all.
It does dictate what their ethnicity is because that's pretty much the definition. But it doesn't dictate their culture. You are correct.
Wait a minute. But, now I got to look up ethnicity.
You know, and what it may be, it may be just that because furrydom has been kind of an outlier so far, they're kind of on the outskirts of inclusion, that it's going to be longer before they really genuinely consider those stereotypes. I mean, right now you're kind of working, it's a very small community compared to the community at large. So I would expect it to go through that infancy where people are getting exactly what they expect, which would be the stereotypical characteristics. And it'll be a while before you see that branch out, just because you need probably a larger and older community for that to work. And I don't mean older as in the age of the people in the community. I mean how long the community has existed in the open.
Okay. And I have the definition for ethnicity here. And
okay.
It doesn't necessarily... ethnicity.
Is this furry ethnicity or just ethnicity?
No, it's just regular.
Regular ethnicity.
Ethnic traits, background, allegiance, association. Another definition is... wait, here we go. Where is it?
Quality? No, okay.
Wait
you,
a minute,
you
here
are,
we go. The state
I'm gonna,
of belonging
I'm gonna
to a social group that has a common national or cultural tradition that has nothing to
concede.
Do with skin color.
I'm going to concede.
Okay.
I concede.
Yeah, because, you know,
you can be ethnically Irish and, you know, of Indian descent. You are correct.
Yeah. And so basically I'm saying like what you see is not what you get.
Right.
And that was my point. And I guess whenever I think about diversity is like if somebody does want to have a black character, but they quote unquote act white, or you have like white characters that act black, you know, because they're from the urban or
and
whatever.
And I have
that crap.
A serious issue
yeah.
here.
Yeah.
A black character is not acting white or black. Typically, those characters act according to their socioeconomic background.
Absolutely.
Someone from an inner city acts as though they're from the inner city. It doesn't matter whether they're black or white or purple. It's in America, at least, it's very much socioeconomic class. In Ninjil, the print comic I'm doing, the lab manager happens to be black. Anybody comes at me saying he acts white is going to get a fucking earful. That's completely racist. And
yeah, there are idiots all over.
Of course.
Something, I mean, like, I'm black, obviously. And, you know,
What do you mean, obviously?
Yes, actually.
Well, he told us. He didn't tell anyone else.
He didn't tell you. Yeah, I didn't like, say it on the podcast.
You don't sound black. What are you talking about?
Which is exactly what I'm getting at. Is that, like, I've basically lived my whole life with that kind of shit, going back and forth, which just proves that there are idiots all over the place.
Yeah.
There's not much more other than that, and it's kind of a shame, but still, you know, unless I go out of my way to say so, or do something oddly stereotypical, I guess, just to get the point across, it's hard to tell over the radio. I mean, some people you can... with like different voice qualities, like, but yeah,
even then it depends. I mean, because, you know, again, it really comes down to where you grew up, you know, what the socioeconomic class was you grew up in, or particular regions. You end up with people who have quote unquote ghetto dialects who are absolutely lily white. It really has to do with where you came from more than it does what where you are.
I think the ghetto is non-specific to the races. People don't know that
unless
they've
been around, unless they have some sort of diversity in their community.
Yeah, so that's something that tends to happen. It's also difficult with the internet because you don't know where anyone's from or what they look like. So it's very easy for people, for example, to make really weird, crazy assumptions and say crazy shit online. But then you realize that they've actually literally never met a black person, and all they had to go on is Madea and Tracy Morgan.
Yeah.
So it's like, I was just like, oh, Christ, so this is why they said that. What the hell?
Yeah. Yeah, but, I think
like, that... We'll kind of bring it back to... Kind of bring it back to fiction, though.
Yeah.
Just so we don't get depressed.
Too complex. Yeah,
right.
Let's get back to fiction. Honestly, I don't think there's anything wrong with, you know, picking a character and making them a different color, or, you know, picking a character and making them female, you know, just because you look at your cast and realize that everybody is a white male. Wanting to change that, I don't think is a bad intention. I don't even care why you want to change it.
Yeah, like, and the thing is, like, there's a tendency, at least with American, like, media culture, is to kind of associate straight white males as the default humans, regardless of the setting.
I have a defense for that. Because it's really easy. Watch this.
Have you seen the poster it doesn't matter what color you are, whether you're brown or yellow or black or normal? That's the fucking concept, and it's outrageously offensive.
Here we go.
Tom Cruise as the Last Samurai or the casting of the Last Airbender.
Oh my god, I was so pissed.
Oh, and leave us not forget Avatar. Pocahontas in space.
Oh,
all right.
I think it was wasn't it straight up Dances with Wolves with Smurfs?
Yep.
Yeah,
pretty much.
To be fair, the Last Airbender casting wound up being a blessing in disguise because of the horrible quality of the film itself. Because guaranteed, if they'd casted that thing correctly, because the movie itself wouldn't have changed at all, besides the cast. And then they would have just had more reason to say, well, look, Asian leads just don't work, I told you. And it's like, no, it's because then Night Shyamalan can't make a good movie.
Okay.
Trying to say something.
Yes, I've been trying to get my point across. It was just really quick. All I was going to say is you take your white piece of paper, which is your normal color of paper, you draw on it with a pen, usually a black pen, and what do you do when you're done? You have a white character because you only have those two things. I was just trying to make a joke.
Don't.
I was just trying to make a joke.
That's retarded. That's a joke.
I wasn't being serious. It is like,
Excuse me, I shouldn't say retarded. That's just terrible. I apologize for using that word. But
that's
That was my thing. It's where you said a white paper, which is the normal color of paper.
Yeah, it's the normal color of paper. You find
flesh color crayon.
Find me a notebook that's not white.
A stack of Manila right here, man. there's various colors of paper. There's construction paper.
White to beige for like drawing paper.
There, okay. I think I understand the point, but I have to disagree with you.
The point was this just a fucking joke.
It's a joke, but the underlying like what I think you think makes the joke funny is a false notion. If you have a character on that white piece of paper and you color them brown, they're now a racial, there's a racial difference. They're not a white character colored brown. Thinking that adding color to a character does not change their race.
No, it doesn't. It was just
does
a
change
simple,
their race.
It wasn't.
It does. They're colors now. They're a different race.
No, it doesn't. No.
It does.
No, it doesn't.
Your inherent assumption.
It's not just the colors.
People, if your inherent assumption is that different colored people act in different ways, that's a racist idea.
I never said anything about that. All I was saying, you take a white piece of paper. It was a fucking joke, and it's a lead up to something else. It's like you know, if I don't like using the word race a whole lot because a lot of it insinuates a whole lot. When you say race, it's usually said in such a way that it insinuates a lot more than merely the how much pigment is in somebody's skin.
Are you going to talk about melanin tissues?
No. I'm saying it's like, okay, it's like if you go pick somebody like from Africa, like very much an African person, they're gonna have their features are gonna look different than somebody from Wales or somebody from China.
So we're talking about also
And that's what I was about to get at. It's like, well, if I draw a character with extremely African features on a white piece of paper, how does that make them white?
Well, yeah, it was a joke that was supposed to lead into more of a discussion, but we're having this big argument. No. Yes, that's an important factor. Features, when I earlier said palette swapping, that's a term used in video games where you basically have the same goddamn enemy. It just has different colors, but it pretty much does the same damn thing. You know, that's just palette swapping. You're not really taking the care to actually design a character. Now, okay, of course,
well, give me half a second.
Wait. Of course, one last little sentence. But of course, you can have characters of differing colors and skin tones that look pretty much the same because, you know, people mix across the world and features get blended and traded and exchanged and all sort of that thing. So there is not a one-fits-all rule of thumb either.
Right. All I was going to say is, like, take a breath because you're screaming now. Okay. And you heard it.
Wow.
Take a breath. Take down like two notches before you blow my friggin' ears out. And then we're all good. No, I do understand what you're saying now. And yes, there are different racial characteristics. And race is a correct term. It's, you know, it's a scientific classification.
It's not scientific.
Where do you think we got the word?
Fucking people making shit up so they could segregate people.
No, it's not. It's a classification. That's how you tell the difference.
I'm looking it up.
Well, okay.
Let's just use it for the sake of you having a common definition. We just have a common definition right now.
There's no other word. There are different racial characteristics other than the pigmentation of the skin, and that does make sense. And I do. You know, I do understand what you're saying. I don't know that I've seen that a lot in comics, especially with, I guess, the races that have very distinct traits. You know, you don't see a lot of English noses on African people of African descent, or Nigerian descent would be a better way to even put that. I do think that people, for the most part, when there's a dramatic difference, make that known. other than just the color, don't they? I mean, have you seen examples where it's clearly white bone structure, you know, Anglican bone structure,
yeah,
with a different color person?
Not in years.
Yeah.
Like if you look at really old stuff, sometimes you'll get that, but very rarely these days do you have that issue.
And is that, I think that might just be a matter of exposure.
It's like a matter of exposure. I mean, we can also get into like things like people's perceptions of what, you know, of like, this way I would put it is like racial coding in animation. Mm-hmm. And like drawing and like art stuff like that. Like, for example, people's idea that Japanese characters in anime are drawn like white people.
Yeah. Because absolutely they clearly don't know many Japanese people.
That and also they haven't seen what happens when Japanese people draw white people.
Yeah.
like for example, let me find a better picture of Yugi, because I think one of the best illustrations of this is contrasting the main character from Yu-Gi-Oh! Yugimoto with a character named Jean-Claude Magnum, who's supposed to be American.
Right.
All right, here's one for Yugi. Or is that Magnum? Hang on a second. I copied and pasted one of them to you.
That's Yugi.
Yugi. Okay. Now here's Magnum.
I love Magnum.
Yeah. And one of the and you look at what they will do with like the eyes, for example, they're generally a little bit more like just, I guess, kind of angry looking. I don't know, it's hard to describe, but most of the time the two things you'll notice the most are very boxy features and blonde hair almost exclusively.
Yeah, it's almost like the, you know, 1940s German, you know, the Aryan poster kind of.
Yeah.
That's where they got the concept of what white.
That or what was that other guy that was like
Guile?
In America?
Guile from Street Fighter is like that.
No, I'm talking about also from the Yu-Gi-Oh series. Exactly. Anyone who watches Yu-Gi-Oh Abridged knows which character I'm talking about.
Bandit Keith.
Yeah, Bandit Keith in America. Sort of thing. Obviously, taken to an extreme in the Abridged version.
Broad chest, square jaw. Straight lines, top bottom for eyes.
Got a like a power complex.
Yeah, very angular.
And with that,
just, like, ridiculously obviously American is the whole idea. But that's kind of the thing that I was kind of getting at is when you're talking about like racializing, it's generally on the lines of whoever's doing the drawing. Right. You know, it's like from I guess the way I would put it is don't confuse simple art with depictions of Caucasian.
Because
those two things can be very different. Like, you know, even Doug, like the characters in Doug are really screwy.
Let's talk more about Doug a little bit after we take another break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back.
Where's Key Scenario?
That was Superheroes by Monk, found at musicalley.com by Mevio.
Play that off in a court of law as having been a joke.
I know, but if it's... See, the problem with doing a bit like that and saying that it's parody or a joke starts to erase itself the more often you use it, as then it becomes a sort of arguably a part of the show, and therefore...
If that is true, every trope on the planet
No, you
worth
can,
litigation. Okay.
You can... No, it's not a trope. He was actually singing the words. He was doing
the
part.
It's, okay.
If that was a staple of going to break on this show, yes, they would definitely have
a case.
Okay,
then we call it an homage. And then it's still legal.
But it's a little uptight.
Anyway,
if we were using the clip from CBS, that would be an issue, but we're not.
Well, we don't make any money here.
Is this the point where I have to give the standard boilerplate?
No.
Not a lawyer. Don't take advice from me. I'm just a chick.
Right. And we don't make money here on the Webcast Beacon Network. However, if you would like to help us, you can go to webcastbeacon.com/advertise to take a look at advertising opportunities, such as sponsoring individual episodes and advertising on our Project Wonderful ads.
I would like to actually make an ad pitch right now.
You should do that.
I would like everyone to listen to this very closely.
Uh-oh.
One of these days, Fess will have an aneurysm on the show. You want to be advertising during that show. We're going to get a gazillion replays of that episode, but we don't know when it's going to happen. Advertise now, advertise often. You might be the lucky winner.
It could happen. It could happen.
Definition of race as a classification of humans on Wikipedia. Race is a classification of humans into large and distinct populations or groups by factors such as heritable phenotypical characteristics, geographic ancestry, but also often influenced by and correlated with traits such as appearance, culture, ethnicity, and social economic status.
It was phenotypical traits that we were referring to when we talk about the broad nose on people of African descent or an angular nose from, you know, German descent or brow lines from Mongolian descent. Those would be phenotypical traits.
However,
phenotypic traits.
However, this first sentence of race, according at least to Wikipedia, as far as classification of humans, is precisely why I have an issue with it, because basically it starts off trying to be a little bit more specific and then just goes, well, fuck, it could be anything. Because they list all these different aspects, and then if you take all of these different aspects, then you got race, you got sub-race and sub-race within sub-race, because then you're just like quantifying like every little section of where people live and every slightly different little feature. It's like,
one, you're yelling again. Stop it. Two,
I hate the reason, of quote-unquote race.
I get that, but it is typically used by sociologists, and I mean it does have a proper use. And how specific do you really need this conversation to be? When I talk about, you know, drawing someone of African descent, do you really need me to go into phenotypic trait classification and cultural classification? And, you know, should we just go down to genome typing? Or we just say race?
I don't want to use the word race. You just said African descent, and that's fine.
Because there are a lot of fucking white people in Africa.
Yeah, well, you don't...
A lot of them. Do you remember apartheid?
And a lot of Arab people.
Those people are from African descent. They were born there. Their parents and grandparents and great-grandparents were born there. We're all of fucking African descent. That makes no sense. I can't say African descent. You qualify. I qualify.
Right.
Every human being on the planet qualifies.
All right.
Australopithecus.
But still, race is still a gross oversimplification.
That's kind of my point.
Well, when you just say race, to me, that's a gross oversimplification.
So
a lot of times when people use it, they imply so much. By just saying,
I get that you don't really like the idea that it kind of implies subspecies of humans, but yeah, let's just, for the purposes of this discussion, do that. Otherwise, we'll be dealing with this for the entire time will never get any further.
So I guess I wanted to have the sort of this. I don't even know where I wanted to go.
What we're going to end up if we go the direction that you're going with is we're going to have to start referring to people by the color of their skin. That's the only way we're going to get, you know,
The
only time I ever really refer to somebody, the very few times that I actually have to refer to like skin color is when I'm trying to point somebody out of a crowd to somebody else, and it's like that person
over
there.
It's a defining characteristic. It makes sense in a visual context.
Yeah, purely visual, and it's like I guess I don't really see much.
This is actually a good segue into something that matters. one of the things that Spike brought up is that a lot of people refrain from injecting diversity into their cast, into the cast of their comics, because they have this bizarre fear of offense, of being seen as just being PC or as being contrite or cloying or any of those other things. So what would you say to those people?
The people that saying, oh, you're just doing that because.
No. The people who are like, well, I would put more LGBT people in my comic, but I don't want to offend anyone. Or I would put more black
pussies.
People in my comic.
Lazy.
Well, they're being pussies or they're being lazy. Of course, the flip side is they also don't really have to if they don't want to.
Of course not.
However, Spike's words specifically were people refusing to. And if you're adamant against doing that versus at least considering it, I believe an issue. One of the things that was brought up in that whole Google Plus discussion was that some people were bringing up, what about the Write What You Know? And you don't know that. Mm-hmm. And obviously Write What You Know is a good place to start because you know something. Yeah. But it doesn't mean that you can't.
Well, I would say,
research. Go ahead.
It doesn't mean you can't learn stuff. It's like one of the things. Where is this guy? He did a really good. This guy Tim Lai, who I think is the last person who commented here as of this recording. He says, you know, the whole write what you know thing is kind of bullshit. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. It's kind of bullshit, but a better phrase is to know what you write.
Yeah.
Is it like either do some research or talk to some, or you know, just don't create characters who are massively offensive. a good way to do that is generally to like base them on people you know.
Mm-hmm.
That helps because I mean a lot of people do that just in their writing anyway, even on a subconscious level. But like for example, if you only have one black person, don't base them on Flavor Flav. That's not gonna go very well. You know what I mean? Like, because there are lots of little ways to get around, like your issues you may have.
Obviously, you can't take Write What You Know to such a literal extreme, or there would be no fantasy fiction. Period.
Exactly.
You know, beyond that, if you're a writer, get the fuck out of your house. Holy crap. Like, how? I don't care where you live.
Oh.
There are people different than you. You can find them if you go out occasionally. I cannot handle writers who have no experience in life. You know, if you've lived your entire life in one little town, going to the same three bars and the same three restaurants and never having new experiences, your writing is already static and it's going to suck. Stop it.
I was going to say it does depend on where you live. I mean, if you go outside of Salt
Lake. Not really.
I'm from St. Cloud.
I saw,
in my experience in going to high school, I saw one black person. Ever
drive somewhere else
until I moved until like I was like late teens then I when I was taking the bus then I saw there's more people types of people when, here and then when I moved to the cities forget about it and I met so many more people and it's like
I grew up in Longmont, Colorado, which at the time I grew up was pretty lily white. My side of town was we had one black person in school and then but right before I left we had two because his brother came into high school. So I do understand what you're saying, but I had a car. and I was able to drive. And, you know, if you can, you don't, just because you live in a certain area doesn't mean that you can't experience other people. And we do have the internet now, which we should be aware of, since this is about.
Yeah, but you can't. See, but really? here's the problem with the internet. You can't trust anyone's avatar to really actually show who they are.
I didn't say anything about avatars.
And you can't tell by typing.
Forums. There are forums from people. There are cultural forums that you can just troll. Just walk around and walk around. Just scroll around and
don't troll. I mean.
You mean lurk.
I think you mean lurk.
Lurking.
Sorry.
Lurk. Lurk is a far better thing to do than troll, for the love of Christ.
Yeah, but you can't tell us what somebody's culture or heritage is just by how they type.
I said go to a cultural forum.
Yeah, but you still can't trust those people. You don't know for sure. You can't. You're suggesting that just because you go to a cultural forum, that you can trust everyone's avatars and what they type and who they say they are.
Suggest that. I think what I'm suggesting is that for those of us who have some shred of trust in humanity, if I go to a Chinese American forum, it's not just full of a bunch of white people from Iowa pretending to be Chinese. Probably most of those people there are actually going to be Chinese Americans.
Okay.
And I can glean from their stories some concept of the culture so that I don't come out looking like an ignorant twat.
Yes.
There we go.
All right.
But yeah.
This is a great episode.
Most reliable way to talk to people.
Yeah.
Yeah. But if you're 14 and you can't get out, fine. That's what the internet's for.
Well, yeah, if you're 14 and can't get out, there's only so much writing you're going to be doing anyhow.
I do want to bring
this up.
It's a good place to it's good to get into the habit. Even if you're young and you don't have the ability to, you know, guide your own experiences, you can get into the habit of learning about people that are different than you and not being a fucking afraid of people that are different than you. I know that controls a lot of the experiences people have, you know. Oh, I wouldn't go to that section of town. That's the black section of town. Oh well, what the fuck? Seriously, people?
I grew up in Chicago, and there were spots, just didn't really go, but that was more like okay, yeah, if you go past this line, the Klan is going to get you. So it's like, oh, let's just go away. You know, but like, the nice thing about Chicago is it's really diverse. Yeah. So I kind of grew up among all types of people, like the famous, at least in my family, stupid little story was when I was about 5, my little sister was born. I had no concept of like race being a function of parentage or like biology. So I just thought that you kind of roll the dice, then whatever you get with what you get. So like sister had like her eyes closed and she looked, you know, somewhat, I mean, to a 5-year-old, she looked Asian. So I was like, saw her. I was like, oh, I didn't know she was Chinese. And this in front of the Asian nurse,
oh,
who just kind of looks at me. I was like, at the time, I didn't know why. And then I was older. I'm like, oh, should I go back and apologize? I'm like, it's been 10 years and you don't live there anymore. And you don't know her name.
And you were
this will be hard. And I was 5. Yeah, you know, I guess this is when I was 15 when I realized it was kind of messed up. But it's like, yeah, I was 5 when I did that. But yeah, it's like that's kind of the place I'm coming from is I'm used to things being so diverse that when I was little, I didn't realize that, you know, certain types of people give birth to the same type of person.
And on the other side of the spectrum, we have the family story. My grandmother was the first one born in the United States. They were from England. And she had never in her life seen a black person. She was maybe 4, and they were walking down the street, and there was, for some reason, considering the time frame, there was a white woman, and she had a little black baby in a stroller. And my grandmother promptly bit the baby, and when she was pulled away by her horrified mother and reprimanded, she said, "But Mama, chocolate."
Oh, wow.
So there are people. She was 4, aww. And this was way, way back, you know, so she had no concept that there were people that had different skin colors than she had. So I know that there are people out there that the only concept they have of diversity is television, but that's still not an excuse.
No, like, well, that and it's a very, very poor indicator. Right, I mean, right. For Christ's sakes, the Friends is a common example. New York, and there are no one who is not white, except for like in the last couple seasons when they started to realize that it was becoming a running joke. But one that almost that I don't think ever did get the fact that this is probably screwed up was Queer as Folk, gets into a whole different issue of like the weird separation where like only whites are gay if it's a good thing. Which one was this?
I was going to say the hot one. That's a broad net for that cast. I cannot remember any of their names. His boyfriend was HIV. HIV positive. They explored the whole steroid use thing. His boyfriend was a professor. Didn't he have some Latino descent? Wasn't his father Latino or something?
I don't remember it that well. I didn't watch the entire series.
Cast now,
and I really can't tell based on the cast.
I wanted to mention Spike's little story here because it's funny. People that know Spike already know this story, but we're gonna just say it here anyway. She does Templar Arizona, and she got a critique, if you will, by somebody on Something Awful. And claiming that whoever was drawing Templar Arizona really needed to meet some real black people because this particular character was a white person's idea of what black people are like. And for people that don't know, Spike is very much a black woman.
Yeah. I know very much. She's black. Wait.
I mean,
yep.
Not more or less black than other black people.
Well, no, but... Spike is very much Spike. I mean, she is she's all there. She has a very good presence when she's in the room. That's what I was referring to as like, because I also met her in person once in Minneapolis, and she was kind of telling this story too. And it's like, yeah, she kind of just the room gravitates towards her stories. It's great.
She definitely has a presence.
Yes.
Well, it's the same thing when I got the email telling me that I, you know, was doing a bad job as a man writing, you know, as though I was a female character. You know, it's like, oh, well, thank you for showing your biases, but totally.
Yeah, there are morons all over.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of where it gets to for that one.
We mentioned television. Obviously, television is not a very good example. A lot of the mainstream media is not a very good example. Movies. Etc. You will find gems here or there. One of the things that I just found just completely whack about BET, the Black Entertainment Network.
Oh, God.
Okay, I had seen, this is the biggest example, which this kind of irks me, is like, okay, there is like this Coca-Cola commercial, like on, I've seen before, where this cute white girl is, you know, it's an open glass of Coca-Cola, and it's all like fizzling and tickling her nose, and she's giggling. The same exact thing, except with a black woman, was on the BET network. And I'm watching this commercial, is like, this is the same goddamn commercial. You palette swapped. You fucking palette swapped. The point.
That's BET. There's a couple of episodes from the Boondocks, which I have, you know, there are things that I like and don't like about the Boondocks,
right.
But yeah. My two favorite episodes are the ones where they basically just sit there and annihilate BET for 30 minutes straight.
Yep.
And in fact, those two were banned on American television, partially because BET has, at one point, Boondocks was going to be on BET, so they have like this weird kind of contractual relationship with the Boondocks still. So
they
actually
find them on YouTube.
Are we talking about the two?
And they're in the DVD sets for.
Are you talking about the two black white guys? so to speak. There's like two white guys in the series that are just like they're like.
Oh no, no, not the ones voiced by Charlie Murphy and
Samuel L. Jackson.
No. That's not those two. No, they literally have two episodes where they depict the BET offices as essentially being like Dr. Evil's group, but with like this crazy black female version of Dr. Evil.
Yeah.
Based on I forget her name.
Jones?
No. The actual woman was in charge of BET at the time.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, I don't remember her name. Yeah.
I'll have to look it up here.
Yeah, my main issue with that commercial example is like, why isn't this black girl commercial on any other network ever, you know?
Well,
like,
yeah, there is still very much the idea in advertising that people will buy products from people that look like them.
That's
faster
true.
Than they, and it is, you know, however unfortunate that is. And actually, it's been decreasing over the years. When they did the studies 10 years ago versus the studies that they've done today, it's becoming less so.
There's still plenty of commercials I could just fucking pick apart.
But what I'm saying is advertising is still working on that notion that the majority of people will buy something from someone who looks like them before they will buy something from someone that looks different than they do. And because that's still a truism, you're still going to see that in advertising. As it's becoming less and less true, we should see less and less of that.
Well, I'm going to buy anything from a really cute looking girl, regardless of what, you know.
Which is why we still see women in commercials.
Yeah, I understand. Actually, that's
imping
not
their vaginas.
It's not true, really. It's not really true. And don't get me on the stupid mom commercials where dad is a fucking dumbass as hell.
What I'm saying is that because we do still have these generalized ideas, we're still going to see it in advertising. So I'm not really one to bitch about advertising because it is a reflection of the population. It doesn't go the other way around, but it should be changing. With time.
Okay, the character is Deborah Leavell, and let me see if I can find the name of the actual woman here. The actual woman that she's based on is Deborah L. Lee, who is a president and chief executive officer of BET Holdings, a parent company of BET. There's also a character based on Reggie Hudlin, who actually did write for Marvel for a time with Black Panther. He's the guy who decided that Storm and Black Panther should get married because they're both black Africans.
Both black.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, I agree that it's very weird that they never interacted before then, which they hadn't. It's really odd when you think about it, that because in the comics, Black Panther is like a fictional African nation, and Storm, prior to being in the X-Men, was the goddess of a small, I don't know if it was a village or a small nation or what it was, but in any case, she had a literally like a kingdom of sorts that she kind of left to be with the X-Men, and they basically never mentioned again. Like, once in a while they'd have an episode or an issue where she'd go back there, but it was very rarely touched upon. And it was like, okay, that's cool, they should interact some because they both have very similar backgrounds. It'd be kind of like, okay, there's a character here who's the king of England, and then you have Dr. Doom, who's the lord of Latveria, and they never interacted? That's really weird, you know?
Yeah.
But like, it was kind of screwy because they made them get married, which, rather than just having them get married and maybe having her divide her time between Black Panther and the X-Men, she just kind of joins him and leaves the X-Men. Really weird. Oh. Yeah, well, it was just kind of sad.
That's what women
do.
Women give up their eyes for penis men. That's what it's all about.
Reggie Hudlin is not the best person to be writing ever. But like, what was weird is that soon after that, Bishop turned evil. So then the X-Men had no black people whatsoever.
Yeah.
It was just kind of this weird.
If the cast had been far more diverse than it was, it wouldn't have looked weird.
Exactly.
They hooked up and married, but because they were like, you know, two of three black folk, and they went and got married, what have you done?
Yeah. It was just kind of like, okay, I get what you're going for,
but
it backfired a bit to me. I mean, there are people who are really, you know, behind it because they're like, oh, we finally have, you know, like, well, the other side of the coin, I guess, is that there are very few you know, black couples in, yeah, well, any media. Most of the time they tend to do interracial couples, either because it's because on the one hand, instant kind of pathos, because you can always have the, you know, a little bit more to do with, like, okay, the issues with interracial dating. But it's weird when that's all you see and you just have to notice that.
Right.
And I understand, like, from some people's perspectives, they really appreciated that. Okay, well, we have two black Africans actually getting together, actually being happy, having a nice marriage that doesn't end in someone getting murdered, which is something that just happens in comics, period. I mean, nobody's relationship stays together. So they're like, okay, we're kind of happy with that. But it's like, for me, no, that's... It's there's there are way too many problems with it for me to let it slide.
Right. And I don't want these critiques to turn people off, you know, again, to make people afraid that there are going to be these same kind of critiques made if they try and introduce diversity into their cast in a way that doesn't quite work. If people do write you and say, hey, this doesn't quite work and here's why, listen to that. But don't think, oh, see, I knew it was a mistake in the first place to even try. There's a difference between listening to valid critiques and listening to whiners. We don't need to listen to whiners. There are going to be people who are pissed off about anything. Ignore them. If people do have valid concerns, yeah, okay, try to make some changes. But, you know, you can't ever live your life off what people are going to say. And don't let the fact that there are issues when people have included diversity, that there are still issues there. Don't let that dissuade you from introducing it in your own work.
Exactly.
The more you know.
See, now he's just going to try, like, to push your copyright button.
At least he didn't do the little jingle that goes with it.
Well, dun, dun, dun.
Oh, there it is.
If I can find it.
I always end up with the AOL thing. Bum, bum, bum. Like, I don't know. I don't, bum, bum, bum. I can't remember how it goes now.
We have some guest art yet, or listener art. For the webcomic Beacon. By the way, if you go to webcastbeacon.com/art, you should be able to find over 100 examples. I think I need to update it of guest and listener art, or Becky art. We like to incorporate guest art for episodes. And so basically, if you draw us Becky, we'd incorporate it into a future episode cover. And then, of course, link to your webcomic and whatnot. And let me take a look to see what we got left here. I think we have two more yet by Zach Holmes. And I wonder which one I should use. There's one where she's basically being a news reporter, and then another one's a mad scientist. So,
well, shouldn't we just color her a different color?
I was thinking about, oh, should I draw Becky as like a black person?
Don't black bother. Version?
No, give her one black friend. That's awesome.
The sassy black friend who
likes Barbie's black
friend. She's always sassy. She's always putting her hand up for no apparent reason, even though she's from fucking Iowa.
And she's got a big booty.
Brilliant. I love
the whole snake charmer neck thing. Yeah, no.
I love that. That's brilliant. I thought,
maybe a leopard print pants or something.
Oh, perfect.
Afro and the giant 70s earrings. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Hey, it should be mentioned, the super awesome fan art from our very own Adam Smithy. Was really awesome and stuff from Webcomic Hell.
Yep, well, I'm going to write that down so we get the link in here.
And it was Hal Sparks I was thinking of, by the way, from Queer as Folk. I thought he had some sort of Hispanic story, but I might have just been looking at his hair.
Adam Smithy of the Tropecast and Webcomic Hell did put together a little art of the hosts of the Webcomic Beacon. So we'll put a link to that in the show. Also, additionally, because I need to mention it, I was on The Geek Life, which is a podcast that Melissa Kircher is on. And basically, the wives and girlfriends of all the people that run The Geek Life were on the show, and the show is called The Geek Wife.
Wife and or girlfriends of Melissa?
No, of the people on the show, like the normal people on the show.
Right. So she's normally on the show. So are you the wife and or girlfriend of Melissa?
Yes, I was the host wife of The Geek Wife. And we didn't really know what we were
doing. Interesting.
Yeah.
What?
I made a joke at the beginning of this, like, and I'm Melissa's wife. Well, we're not married, but if we were, yeah, I would be. So that was funny. So we'll put a link to that in the show. That was actually a few weeks ago, but we haven't had a Webcomic Beacon for a while. And I do want to put another shout out, a final shout out for Diana Knox, Intrepid Girlbot book number one Kickstarter. She has reached her goal, but if you still want to get in on that book and the Kickstarter stuff and basically do a pre-order, we're going to put the link to that in the show notes as well.
And so I'm actually going to say please do, because when she asked for that, you know, her goal was her bare minimum. She did not pad that number. So there's still money going to come out of her pocket unless more people get in on this. So get in on
it. Come on, help her out. She's awesome. I've been to a couple of conventions with her.
And Girlbot is a silent comic. It doesn't, I mean, it has sound effects or whatever, but it's not like there's talking. And that's a really cool way to do comics, I think. It'll use a lot of the visuals. So it's like, I support that a lot. Yesterday, I was on Animation Aficionados, which is an affiliate of the Webcast Beacon Network, and with Ben Carver and TV's Mr. Neil, who are also a fellow web cartoonists, and we were talking about the reboot CGI series, the first CGI animated series in the world, as well as the first show sold to America from Canada, apparently. That won't be out for a couple of weeks, so I'll post a note about that when that comes out. But that was a lot of fun because I'm a big reboot fan.
There's blood coming from my eyes right now.
Yeah. for what?
Hey, reboot's fun.
Oh no,
God, it's awesome. I have the DVD.
I spent my Saturday morning watching Goober and the Ghost Chases from 1973, which was a sort of Scooby-Doo.
But he was blue. It was
blue. Yes. It wasn't a ripoff. It was the same company, Hanna-Barbera, that made Scooby-Doo. Yeah. But in this story, the dog could turn invisible when he got scared. They actually met real ghosts from time to time. And over half the episodes feature the Partridge Kids.
Yeah.
So it was awesome.
Like a bizarro version.
It was Bizarro World Scooby-Doo.
Oh, yeah. And instead of the Mystery Machine, they had this really super awesome six-wheeled vehicle.
Yeah.
It just looked cool. It didn't do anything special. It just looked cool.
Did they ever meet the Hanna-Barbera Ghostbusters, the ones with the gorilla?
No.
Why not?
That was live action. That was different.
Really?
Also available on DVD, by the way.
The one with the gorilla was live action? What?
Forrest Tucker, Larry Storch, and a gorilla.
You know what? I am going to ghost chase.
Anyway, I think we're kind of off the topic here.
Ghostbusters.
But we are at the end of this week's episode of the Webcomic Beacon at webcomicbeacon.com. And I hope that this episode has been informative as well as really entertaining.
And eye-bleedingly frustrating.
Never mind. It was not...
if anybody has any extra comments, please go to the site and so we can continue this conversation for those who are interested. If you feel you need to correct us on anything, please check that out as well. And we're going to close this off. I have been Fess of
he's not anymore.
I have no idea.
He has been.
He was once.
He was once many times.
I'm Fess of PSIWebcomic.com.
This is Tanya of DaisiesAndShitProductions.com.
This is Mark of AutumnLake.com.
And this is Marcus Almond of RazorKid.com. Quoting Spike, don't pull that Doug bullshit and call it diversity either. You know what I mean? These green, purple, orange, and pink people do not count as a diverse cast. I should not have to point that out.